the two things we wanted to talk about today, you know, I sent you an article, and of course it really popped up with everything we're talking about this month. And it was
how to spot and treat team burnout from COVID-19.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember what publication this came from. I think it was Practice Life.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
I didn't actually connect that in here, but we'll certainly put it on the page. But how to spot and treat team burnout from COVID-19. And certainly this is something that, as we've been talking about, affects individuals very, very differently. But also, because we work in such close quarters, and we're, and in many cases, you know, we're closer with some of our work people than we are people outside of work.
Easily,
And I can very much see how, you know, what an entire team, whether it's the dynamics of the hospital or a couple people that are infected that kind of just bring other people in with them. And so this was a really interesting article.
Yeah.
I was
a little confused by, they call it emotional fatigue instead of, like, they use the term burnout, but they also call COVID-19 has intensified emotional fatigue among veterinary teams, which I don't know if those two terms are interchangeable or not.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah.
But, you know, they certainly point to increased workload, and especially with everything that's going on right now. I mean, between people that have been furloughed or different departments that may have been temporarily laid off or what have you. Those that are still there often have an increased caseload, or if you just are working in a very, very busy hospital and you've had anybody that has maybe been symptomatic or has had to take time away because maybe they live with somebody who you know, doesn't have great immune system or what have you. So increased workload, financial limitations, of course. Unemployment rate is what, the highest since the Great Depression?
Yeah, but probably, I think it's higher now.
And then the lack of social distancing.
Yeah.
And so anyway, just some really, more so on a team level, you know, how to kind of spot if your hospital is in a bad spot. And obviously it's not a, you know, an all-inclusive type article, but, you know, for anybody out there that might be wondering, you know, if their team is kind of dealing with this, or, you know, we think about this being oftentimes just something that affects one person, right? I mean, we kind of keep an eye on certain people, but in this kind of situation,
it's going to affect everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so,
well, and just like you said, the increased workload, not only the increased workload, but the people that are out, like people that are out for, you know, they don't have childcare, or, you know, they're not able to come to work, or, you know, even in the hospital that I pick up shifts in, there was a email that went out that said somebody had tested positive. So, you know, that's even more of a strain on just the stress of it, and and just being able to go to work. And, you know, sometimes we go to work and we think, oh, this is going to be an easy shift. And then suddenly we have all these things that pop up. And in terms of lack of social distancing, one of my classes that I'm teaching now it's animal medical techniques. So there's a lot of skills that I'm supposed to be teaching them. Like, we're supposed to be teaching them how to do blood draws and giving injections and things like that. And there's no way to teach that without us being on top of each other. It's just physically not possible. So, you know, we're having to shift those things off to a different semester, a different term. But, you know, even just being in the hospital in that clinic setting, it's hard to keep yourself separated from people.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you remember when you were in school and you were teaching like radiation safety, and, you know, you did this to hold the animal and get as far away from the table and the beam as possible. Well, it's really difficult to restrain a dog or a cat like that and get away from somebody that might be drawing blood. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast that, you know, we're within inches or a foot or two apart. And what are you going to do? I want to say hi, Jenny Fisher, one of our previous guests.
Oh, hi, Jenny. I'm going to hit the wave button.
Oh, yeah.
I waved at her.
Very nice. Look at you and your Instagram
skills. Yeah, look at me.
So anyway.
That was it. I'm done. That's my one skill.
Nice.
I can hit the thing that tells me what to do.
So the other cool thing that we wanted to talk about, and this was something Joe brought up in his episode, was the ProQol.
Yeah.
And I don't, is this a survey, would you call it? I don't know what
to
call it.
Like
it's not a quiz or a test.
It's almost like a worksheet.
Yeah. Okay. That's a fair.
Yeah.
Fair assessment. The one thing I would say, and on the website, which we'll link up, and it was linked up in our release of his episode, it's kind of hard to find on the website, which is a bit of a downer. And I would recommend that when you do find it, you actually print it out, because it's 3 pages.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to like tabulate your scores and look back and then categorize them. And it gives you all the information to do that, but it's borderline impossible to do just while you're on your phone and try to remember everything.
ahead. Well, what I did is I wrote it all down on a sheet of paper.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Nice. Yeah, I printed it out. I'll say, so it breaks it. So there's 30 questions. If you're not familiar, and it scores from one is never, two is rarely, three is sometimes, four is often, and five is very often. And I'll just read a couple of the sample type questions. I get satisfaction from being able to help people. I like my work as a helper. I feel worn out because of my work as a helper. I feel bogged down by the system. And so there's 30 of these questions, yeah. And you scale it. And then the one
it's also important to do what you and I did. Don't do it right after shift, because your numbers are going to be skewed. Yeah. I did it actually right after we had recorded the episode with Joe, just because I felt like I was in a neutral headspace, really.
Yeah.
To be able to accurately and unbiasedly give those answers.
Yeah, absolutely. And it says to score this as you've experienced things in the last 30 days. Don't take, you know, your last shift or your entire career into account. We have another person that's joined, Allison, one of my coworkers who actually lives in my old apartment in Grafton. Hello, Allison.
So way better.
Yeah, do it. And then it breaks this down into three categories, and the three categories are compassion, satisfaction, which Joe brought up, and I had never really heard that phrase.
Yeah, we hadn't heard that term before.
Certainly have heard of compassion fatigue, but compassion satisfaction is essentially the opposite of that. Burnout, and then secondary traumatic stress. And so the questions aren't really grouped together. They're kind of like, you know, take numbers 1, 10, 15.
And I think that's on purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great that it's that way. And so then you kind of tabulate your scores, and then once you have that information, you say, are you low, moderate, or high in terms of compassion, satisfaction, burnout, or secondary traumatic stress? And I'll tell you, I actually just did this again before I came on, because I wanted to see if anything had changed. I haven't been at work since Saturday, and it was
Hey, there's Robin.
It was kind of a rough week at work, so I kind of wanted to see how it was. And I will say my compassion satisfaction scale, I scored a moderate. I had 30. And between 23 and 41 is moderate. The burnout scale was also moderate. I was at 31. Same thing, between 23 and 41 is moderate. And then secondary traumatic stress was low for me. 22 or less is low when I was 19. I feel like for everything that I struggle with in this field, I feel like I do pretty well at not taking on people's emotional burdens or stressors as my own, or and so I feel like that score actually adequately represents that kind of thing for me. I was actually kind of surprised. I thought the burnout scale might be a little bit higher.
My scores were compassion, satisfaction. I was a 32. That's moderate. Burnout was 34. That's moderate. And my secondary trauma was 19, just like yours.
Okay.
And that's low. And you know, I thought, you know, because I've got a lot on my plate right now. I've been doing, admittedly, probably far too much that I shouldn't be doing. Mm-hmm. And I thought my burnout score would be a lot higher than it actually is.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting to me because, just like you, I mean, I've been working in a clinic now for 25 years. And even though I'm in academia, there just aren't a lot of cases or a lot of things anymore that get my juices flowing.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the reality. I mean, I still like teaching, and there's a lot of things I like doing, but there isn't that, like, oh, I've never seen that before all that often anymore. And some of the outside projects, like, I mean, I've said this to you, this podcast, honestly, is my greatest professional satisfaction these days.
Yeah.
I've been on the board of directors for the California RVT Association for a few years. I just took over the presidency, and that's very different, and it's stressful in its own right, but it's also a lot of fun being involved in, like, policy change. And you know, you and I, you're the chair now, but I was the chair of the credentialing committee, and that also gets stressful at times, but it's also, like, fascinating to be part of that process and
see
these people that, you know, are going through the applications and read the case reports, as you've said before, you know, from other countries, that things that we don't deal with. And so sometimes those are actually great, but all of those things don't put money in our checking account.
Well, yeah, that's
and so true. We still have to do this job to do that. And so then that all just becomes extra and stressful job.
It just and just adds. Kind of think back. I mean, you and I are ECC nerds. So we go back to when we first got into emergency, like we saw all the stuff that we hadn't seen in general practice and all that stuff got us really excited. And because it was new and now 20 years later, all those things that were new are no longer new.
Right.
So now we have to find stuff like being chairs of committees, being on CARFTA, doing this podcast, things that are not stuff we've been doing for 20 years to get our creative juices flowing and our minds working to get through some of these things. So, you know, some of the stuff that I was talking to one of my students today and she was talking about a GDV that came in. I was like, oh, I haven't seen GDV in so long because I'm teaching now. I get to teach about it, but I don't actually get to be involved in it and do all those endorphins and rushing around and getting x-rays done and getting catheters in, getting fluids going and starting to treat for shock and all that stuff. Like I don't get to do that anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I do when I go in, but again, it's been a while since I've actually gone in. So, you know, it's hard to keep your mind fresh and keep your mind engaged when you've been doing the same thing for 20 years. That's why we have to find different stuff for us to do.
Yeah.
Which is this podcast is a big part of that.
Yeah. Agreed.
Somebody's asking you what type of IPA you like. I'm not a big fan of IPAs.
That's my buddy, Chris from back home. he knows I'm a double IPA guy. I trade beer with him when I'm back home. Chris, if you're still listening, I'm drinking, a double IPA from Triple Crossing in Richmond, Virginia. But I think you kind of were in the same type of practice when you were up in New Hampshire. When I worked in Southern California, which was overnight weekend ER, the technicians did everything. We did the anesthesia. Yep. We were surgery techs. We were triage techs. We were all that stuff. And where I am now, I'm primarily in the ICU by my choice because I much prefer critical care to emergency.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other day I went down to the cardiology room to talk to the cardiology resident about a case. And he was going through an echo of a patient we had in hospital and he was looking for a vegetative lesion because he was sure this dog had endocarditis. And he was taking the echo and just focusing on the valves and doing like a whole 360 modeling of this. And it was like fascinating. And I was thinking to myself in that moment, like, I wonder if I actually went to other departments, you know, I love cardiology, but if I went to anesthesia, or if I went to surgery and saw things that now I haven't seen in several years, like would that feeling come back? I don't know.
It might.
So it was something that kind of hit me in that moment.
Like, I mean, it's worth a try, right?
Yeah.
What's
the
worst? Yeah, you hate it. You go back to the ICU and then.
Yeah. But I mean, in that space, I know I wouldn't get to just like look through echoes all day, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it was the ProQual quiz. Again, we'll link it to this page, or it's definitely in the notes already of Joe DiFullio's episode. But anybody that wonders, are you experiencing compassion fatigue? Are you experiencing burnout? And as Joe taught us, was it burnout that is a part of compassion fatigue, or do I have that?
So compassion fatigue is burnout plus secondary trauma.
Yes. Okay. So secondary traumatic stress, I had no idea like factored into that.
Yeah.
So that was.
And we thought interesting. We thought compassion fatigue was its own thing.
Right.
Burnout was its own thing. And
there is some relationship.
There is relationship. Yeah.
So, you know, again, not when you're in a reactionary place, not right when you get home from the worst shift you've ever had in your life, you take this quiz, but after you've maybe had a couple days off, kind of be in a little bit of a reflective place, sit down and take this quiz and accurately score yourself. Again, as you're reading these questions and you go through, you kind of think the way they're laid out, you don't think they really have anything to do with each other.
Right.
And that's, as you said, that's by design. And then you kind of start grouping them together and you get your score and maybe you're just in a moderate range, which frankly, I don't really know what to do with that other than it does say somewhere in there, maybe retest yourself in a couple of weeks and see if you're trending upward, if you're trending downward, or if you're staying about the same. But it's really important to kind of know where you're at.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you and I have been doing this for 25 years, but I work with plenty of people that are 25 years old and I would like to see them not get to this place.
Yeah.
If they're still even in this field in 25 years, but not get to that place and actually be ahead of it and hopefully I'm pretty fortunate. I feel like at Tufts that these are things that we're pretty proactive about.
Yeah.
The solutions are always difficult because that usually means hiring more people and paying people better and
yeah,
things that unfortunately cost money. But if you have a good handle on your headspace and where you're at, and if you're, trending upward, trending downward, or as, I don't want to give it away, but as the guest we interviewed yesterday, if the tide is going out or if the tide is coming in,
right,
it's something that I think everybody would benefit, and not even just in our field, but so many other fields.
Oh yeah. And I don't think this is, I don't think this is a veterinary, veterinary product.
And the questions kind of just talk about being a helper.
Right.
It's not as like, not your job as a veterinary technician,
right,
but your job or your work as a helper,
yeah,
or just helping. So I think it applies to a number of things. The one thing that I did notice, and I'd be very curious to see, is this is version 5, which was dated 2009.
Right.
So it is.
They do have older versions of it that you can compare.
Yeah.
What they changed. I look at that earlier today, and they just changed the wording on some of the things, I think, to make it more universal as opposed to more focused on one thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like not a whole lot would probably change, but I'd be very curious if they, if they updated it at any point now or in the future, what things would look like.
Well, and I think also what I did when I went through these questions is I tried to not go through and just pore over the questions and say, how do I really feel? Right. I was kind of reactionary, basically.
Yeah,
I wanted to give the answer that first popped into my head.
Yeah.
Without sitting there and saying, well, no, on this day it wasn't so bad, but on this day it was really bad.
Yeah.
Like being able to go through and kind of just give that.
Yeah. This is how reaction, I feel now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This is how I feel now about how I've been doing.
Yeah.
Which is really what they're trying to do, is try to get a baseline for what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
And I found it really interesting to go through, and the fact that you and I both came up with moderate, even though we feel like we're not moderate, I wonder how much of that is us overthinking it and saying, well, I don't want to give answers that are too high or too low.
Right.
I don't want to skew it in one way or the other, but maybe we will take it again in a few days or in a couple of weeks to see if anything's changed and see if anything's different. And I feel like these mental health issues, these episodes that we've had, I found a lot of things where I'm like, oh, I'm going to look into that. And see if I can make that work. And, maybe if we implement some of those things that our guests are talking about, maybe we can bring our trend down and maybe bring our trend more towards that low level for all three of these things instead of, well, not, I guess the compassion satisfaction, we don't want to be low. We want that to be high,
right.
But maybe we can kind of swing the shift one way or the other to get ourselves in a better spot. Even if we rank kind of in the middle of the road, if we can sway it just slightly in the other direction, maybe that's going to get us back on the right path.
Yeah, agreed. One other thing we have done in previous Taproom episodes that we actually didn't talk about, so this is going to be a little bit on the fly.
Oh yeah,
something positive. And of course, with everything that's going on right now, it sometimes is a little bit difficult to find, but one thing I will say in terms of my work or my job is how proactive Tufts has been with, I mean, if you are exhibiting symptoms of any kind, it's not just, I mean, obviously, like you say to your supervisor, you've got this going on, but you email the dean.
Yeah.
And say like, hey, I'm doing this. And you kind of start a conversation. Mm. And it's, even though, as we actually talked about earlier, certainly if somebody develops symptoms and, then they're out for a couple of days or up to 2 weeks or whatever, and then it's so right. So then that makes those that are left behind, work that much harder and their caseload goes up. And so, for the person that is now out for a little while, they probably have maybe some secondary traumatic stress about leaving their teammates behind.
Well, yeah, of course.
And then of course, those that are left behind to pick up the slack, their workload is higher, but the reality is it's actually a very good thing. I would, and honestly, this goes back to like pre-COVID days. I would always much rather people stay home and not bring colds and flus or coronavirus into work.
I mean, we're in such close quarters. Anyone that gets a cold is going to give it to somebody else.
Absolutely.
It's just going to happen.
A lot of times when when a regular illness, a cold or a flu, I'm not even talking about coronavirus here, but when it comes into an animal hospital, I mean, that thing bounces around for months, you know, between the front staff and the back staff. And it goes round and round and it mutates once or twice and people get it two or three times. And like, I would much rather just have people stay home. And in this particular situation, they have been so proactive. And that's actually like really good to see that they're supportive and, you know, say, hey, like this is what we need to do right now. So I definitely want to say, like, even though there are days like, man, there really isn't anybody else left to be able to call in because, you know, that's just the way that it is. But like, also at the same time, I would much rather that person be home and be safe and
get better.
Frankly, get better. And regardless, my shift is going to end in X number of hours and we'll figure it out tomorrow. And so anyway, so, you know, the whole idea of actually being a little bit proactive about that was, even though sometimes it's frustrating, it is actually overall like a really good thing. So how about you got anything?
Well, I'm just thinking that I'm looking forward to when things kind of go back to normal, and not just, I'm hoping, and I feel like this is going to happen, is that we're going to go back to a normal that's different. We're not going to go back to what we were in December or January. We're going to go back to some modified version of all these protocols that we've worked so hard to get developed and get to work and have that be the new normal. You know, as much as, you know, we may say that it's annoying to do curbside triage and things like that, but you know, we're going to change it somewhat to the point where it's going to be more conducive to what situation we're in. And also it's going to protect us. It's going to make us better. I feel like doing some of those distancing things of not being close to people and kind of like you said, colds come in and run all the way through the hospital. I think people are going to be more proactive about not being involved in that and not coming into work when they're dealing with that. And I think that may be one of the big positives that I'm hoping to take out of this. Like right now, I don't know if that's the way it's going to happen, but that's what I'm hoping for.
I sure hope so. I hope we learn something that we can apply going forward. Like, otherwise, what was the point?
Right.
And, you know, I think about too, like patient visits. Now we have visiting hours on the weekdays from 5 to 8, which is in the evening, of course, when people get off work. And when we have an ICU full of 20 patients or more, and it's a fairly small room. It's certainly smaller than your treatment room at your old VECM up in. So it gets packed pretty quickly. And we don't have like a maximum occupancy. We didn't have a maximum number of visits or family members or what have you. And there was times like we as the technicians couldn't even get, and then the pods of all the different services, cardiology, internal medicine, et cetera, their pods of faculty and interns and residents and students come through to do rounds. And so all of a sudden at 6 o'clock, there's now 100 people in a room that's literally 20 by 20.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I used to think to myself, like, this is a fire hazard. Like if a fire alarm goes off right now, like it's going to be one of those funny situations where everybody like tries to run for the door and you all get stuck. Like that's literally what would happen. And so I wonder like, okay, can we apply that to only 3 patients can have visitors at one time, only 2 visitors per patient, only 1 visit per patient per day. Like, and those are small things, but when I look back at how it was, you know, previously, that's actually a really big and potentially positive change.
Yeah.
And if, again, I don't make those decisions, so maybe nothing happens, but even though that's a small thing, if we actually learn something and use that as a way to make effective change, that's for the better. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise it was just, you know, 2 or 3 months of major inconvenience.
And you bring up my old practice in New Hampshire, VECM. I want to give a shout out to them because they are opening up a new practice on the 27th, I think. They're going to have a live
virtual
open house, which is going to be really cool. I'm hoping to log into that. I think it's on the 27th.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to getting back in touch with those guys. And, you know, I've been following them on Facebook and you know, getting text message from everybody, how things are going. And that's going to be really cool. It's, I hope at some point people actually get to go in the building because it looks really nice.
I know. You know, through the fantasy football league that we have with all of them and stuff, they're like my second adopted hospital family in New England. But it looks like a beautiful spot.
Yeah.
And I know they do top-notch care up there. Yep. So it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't really have anything else.
I guess we don't really know how to end these things.
I know. This is all new territory.
Yeah.
Other than,
but maybe the next time around, it's going to go real smooth. And
yeah,
I got my one Instagram skill going. I know how to wave to people. Although some people have come in, don't give me the option to wave at them. So I don't know if it's because I don't know them or what the deal is.
Yeah. But we have had a couple other people join.
Come in. Thank you all for joining.
Yes, thank you very much for stopping by the Vet Tech Tap Room.
Yes,
hope you enjoy some kind of adult beverage. It's 4:30, and I don't have anything to do the rest of the night, so I will for sure be having a few more. But
I have plenty to do, but you know,
yeah. All right. Well, I think it's time we sign off. Yeah,
I think so.
All right. Well,
thanks everybody.
Thanks everybody for listening, and it was great that you guys came by.
It's great to see you, April.
Hope to see you guys soon. Yes. And be well, everybody. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.